Blog Talk Radio.
Listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Saturday night, October the 3rd, 2015. I'm Dre, he's Jay. There's a chill in the air as the seasons start to turn a little cooler. The summer is certainly over on the calendar and in weather. And we are drinking our spot of tea and eating our crumpets and getting ready for the NFL's first trip to London tomorrow morning. So weird to think the first game of the week is scheduled to take place a mere 11 and a half hours from now. That is just strange. But before we get to that, we got week four in the NFL, the rest of the games after the Thursday night debacle, if you're a Steelers fan. And Jason, I remember you called that an easy pick. You said the Steelers should have no problem with the struggling Baltimore Ravens. And I know you're going to bitch about the kicking, making that game turn out the way it did, so have at it.
Actually, my problem is with Mike Tomlin.
Mm.
My problem is with the decision-making, especially late. I can understand you don't have confidence in your kicker, but the going for it on fourth down with the – I mean, this is a quarterback who – I mean, Mike Vick, yeah, he's a veteran – that's a lot of faith that they were putting in Mike Vick to start converting these fourth downs. And I want to go on and say they didn't convert any of them. And they did this multiple times. Where punting may have been prudent, and then the last one where they forewent, you know, the field goal to go for that fourth and two, I think it was, and it ended up just being a horrible jump pass from Michael Vick that if he actually just would have stood in there and thrown it with a little zing, would have been much better. Not too excited about the way that went down. The Steelers controlled that game. They owned that game. And hi, Trini.
Hi, Daddy.
I heard her coming
in.
I'm talking to Uncle Andre Trinity.
Why are you not talking to Brandon?
No, Trinity, you need to go to bed. Thank you for coming out here. Go to bed, sweetheart. Okay, good night, sweetie. No, close the door, Trini. Close the door. Thank you. Okay, sorry about that.
At this point, we should point out that you're on baby duty tonight. You're the only adult in the house.
Yes, there was some scheduling that I did not realize with my wife having a engagement for like a girls' night out tonight, and found out a little too late for us to switch the show for Friday, I'm sitting here with a baby monitor right outside my bedroom, and my daughter just decided to sneak into the show, so. But the show's always better when she sneaks in. The 3-year-old always adds excitement to the show.
Cute factor, I love it.
We love amping up the cute. For 3.5 quarters of that game, the Steelers had the perfect plan. They utilized Vic. They slowed it down. They got up. They were up a decent amount. They had the blitz working against Flacco. And, yeah, the kicking woes, I mean, what are you going to do? You miss 2 field goals that are going to put you up 6, which means that even if, you know, the Ravens get the touchdown, they still only win by 1 and I cover. And so everything worked for you in those last, 6 minutes of the game in overtime, because that was in the bag, over, done. But I completely took a lot of offense, I would say, or I didn't like the call to not try to win the game. We needed a little Herm Edwards at that moment, you know?
Hello?
I don't care how bad your kicker's been. He puts it through the uprights. All is forgotten. You go home and you win a game that you're giving away. You're in the process of giving away. At the very worst, just punt. Just punt. Punt them deep. Punt them inside their 10 if you're lucky. You know, put them in some really crappy field position, because not making it on fourth down or missing the field goal is only going to cost you a difference of about 7 yards. At that point, it doesn't matter. You have to win the game. I don't understand that call. No guarantee that they would have made the field goal, obviously, after what had happened in the fourth quarter. You got to try to win there. That made no sense to me.
No, I'm with you. I completely agree that the play calling made no sense to as far as what they called. Did not going for the field goal made sense because your field goal kicker was in the midst of melting down. We get that. We saw that. But the actual play calling, the obvious plays now, you know, in hindsight, of course, but at the time I was even saying it, you know, even though it would have gone against my pick, I was saying, why are you not handing the ball to Le'Veon Bell? He's breaking tackles. He's stomping all over the Ravens. He's running strong. Why not? Why is that not an option here? The first time they go on fourth down, that Vic sweep left and he got stuck. That works excellently 10 years ago. This is not that Michael Vick. This is a different Michael Vick. He showed some flashes of that old Vick during the game, but it's not the same guy. He's fast, but he's not what used to, what we remember what Michael Vick used to be in the open field. It was disgusting. Whether it was on a video game or alive, either way, it was unfair. This isn't that Michael Vick. But that was wrong. The second time they go for it, they're at the 4th-and-1 at the Baltimore 33. You can't punt there. You're at the Baltimore 33. So I understand that. You can't kick the field goal because it'd be 50 yards. And like I said, your kicker was in the middle of immolating himself. I get that. Why is Michael Vick throwing on 4th-and-1? This guy wasn't that accurate when he was great. What are you doing?
And he just especially air-mails short. It. Michael Vick is horrible on short passes. Because
you're
asking
him to throw with touch.
He has no touch, exactly. Everything he throws is with a ton of zip and wildly inaccurate. Michael Vick's accuracy was actually, and you saw it in the game. He was actually making the deep outs and the in cuts, and he was throwing those great. If he needed to throw something 12, 14 yards right to the sideline with authority, he was making those throws. I was impressed with him with that part of the game, because that looked good. And they weren't really stretching the field deep, but they were going intermediate enough that he looked effective. But, yeah, the whole thing with the kicker melting down and the game plan, and I understand it's a 50-yard field goal, but it's overtime. You got to try. You got to go for the win.
As soon as
they decided to not go for the field goal, I knew they were going to lose.
I think I would be okay with not going for the field goal in that particular circumstance when your kicker has just hooked two of them from similar distance.
Yeah, but he was just
why
barely
not run
missing
Le'Veon
Bell. He was just not judging for the wind. It just wasn't factoring in for the wind. I had a feeling that would have, you know, but you got to try. Win the game. That's all that matters. Going for it made no sense. Like you said, you can't punt. Why not?
You're that close. You're that deep into Baltimore territory, and you're
and
it's a 4th-and-1.
Baltimore territory. Kick the field goal. Win the game. Try to win the game.
If it was a 4th-and-5, and you're that deep into Baltimore territory, I'd probably say pooch punt. I probably agree with you there, but it's 1 yard. Get a yard. It's just like Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl last year. It's a yard. Get a fucking yard. Well, come on.
And that was a throw.
Oh, that throw was terrible. The funny part about the game is that the way it starts off is you look at the first Pittsburgh drive and you go, okay, here goes life under Michael Vick for the Steelers. Let's see what happens. And we're going to go incomplete where he got drilled very first play, then a false start, then Le'Veon Bell runs, loses yardage. then a short throw on 3rd and 16 is like, oh boy.
It's going to be a long, yeah. It felt like it was going to be a long night.
Yeah. And he got it together. Like you said, those intermediate out throws, square outs, and comebacks and things of that nature, he was drilling those in pretty well after a while. He got into a rhythm. He broke off a few runs that made you think about the old Michael Vick, little flashback. He had a play-action bomb attempt that slipped through Antonio Brown's hands early in the game. I was like, oh, that was the chance. There it was. Slipped right through Brown's fingers. Then they sacked him out of field goal range on the very next play. But they moved the rock. They took over. They had a much better offensive flow than the Ravens did. They eventually go up 20-7 on that gun to Hayward Bay, pass a diving defensive back. And I'm like, this is not supposed to be happening without Big Ben. No, this is not supposed to be. And I'm in the middle of my own meltdown at that point, not knowing what's going to eventually happen. And then Baltimore comes right back with a touchdown for Joe Flacco to Kamar Aiken. And I was just like, oh, my God. Someone other than Steve Smith made a play for the – oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. And that was the beginning of the comeback. Eventually, the Ravens get their own flow going, come back. They have a few opportunities to actually close it and get the lead or tie it. And the Steelers actually stiffen up and shove them back. And then it looks like the Steelers are going to put it away. And then just those missed field goals are just like, oh, this just doesn't look good. You got the sinking feeling after that second missed field goal. Like, okay, well, now the Ravens are going to come back and either win the game or tie it because there's just too many chances that the Steelers are giving the Ravens to come back. And eventually they did indeed, right before the clock runs out, get the tying field goal to send it to overtime, and we know what happened after that. So one can say the Steelers were the better team. They played better overall all night. But all that matters, of course, is the Ravens get their first win of the year. And it really does make you think about going forward with Vic. You saw the good. You saw what it can be. You saw all the possibilities. And you saw the bad. You saw the, okay, you can't throw anything short because he has no touch. He can't scramble and run away the way he used to.
Yeah.
And some of the decision-making kind of made you scratch your head like, oh boy, what is he thinking? So
yeah,
pretty much
just that. The short yardage play calling was brutal.
Especially on the fourth downs.
Yeah, that's, and I wasn't that keen on them going for it either time on fourth down. And the one in overtime, even Jim Nantz and Phil Simms on the broadcast, and not that those are the guys I go to for my football knowledge. They're both sitting there in the booth going, yeah, you got to kick it here. You got to kick it. This is it. This is the game. They understood.
And I get that, but if he sends the guy out there and he hooks another one, then what's everyone's going, what are you doing? He can't kick.
Well,
you see that. What are you doing?
But that makes it easy because then he could just cut the guy the next day.
Which he did anyway.
That's how it works. That's how it works with kickers. I know. That's how it works with kickers, though.
Yeah. I don't, like I said, I don't blame him for going for it, but why not run with Le'Veon Bell? He's just bruising people back. What?
And you ended up getting lucky because you must have been looking at that line for the 5 minutes that was a 2.5-point spread because it was -3 like the entire rest of the week.
I honestly didn't even know that. I did not pay attention to that.
It was -3 like Saturday. On all day Thursday. I don't know when you picked out that spread, but you must have looked at the line right at that 1 minute where the line had moved to 2.5.
I looked at it like 5 minutes before we went on the air Tuesday night. And
that must have been the 5 minutes.
I got lucky. I'll take it. I'm not giving it back.
That's okay. It wasn't like geniusness won you that pick. So it's okay. It wasn't like you pulled one out with football knowledge or stats. It was basically just it went your way, and it happens. Trust me, this has gone my way many times.
We're not doing much of an after show if we do any at all because, again, Mr. Jason is on baby duty. So our live show, and that's going to be about it. So if you want to get in on the live action, our phone number, as always, is area code 646-595-4534. Email the show in much less detail at gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at IMLDDre. Follow Jason at IMLDJTG. And our picks will be up on the blog after the show is over. And for that, you will go to inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. You will get this live show and any after show that we do. Last show was a full hour after show. We had a lot to talk about and got into it. This one will be a lot shorter, but usually it's a pretty good size after show. So you get a lot of content. It's not just football. We get into any and everything under the sun when the after show begins. So you want to stick around for that. On to week four. Craptastic, as you've already determined it, week four. Because we had a hell of a time trying to pick out some highlight games out of this schedule. There's only one game this week featuring two teams with winning records. This is week four. You should have more winning records than this. There's so much parity and mediocrity in the NFL right now.
Well, this is a week that looked good, I think, when the schedule came out.
Yeah, certainly those two primetime games looked a lot better in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's too soon to be flexing games.
I know, but I'm sure they wish they could have. Well, actually, I don't know if they wish they could because they flex too. Well,
there's
been in their place.
Yeah, there's enough. I mean, there's still enough to talk about, though. Nobody's done for. I mean, really, nobody is just dead in the water, dead on arrival here, for the most part. At least not in those primetime games. Everybody's at least lifed on life support.
A lot of parity, a lot of mediocrity right now.
Yes. Yes, but no, this would have been a good week for the Halloween show.
Scary, spooky schedule. That London game tomorrow morning, Jets in Miami, is so scintillating and so awesome that it's not a highlight game. I'm not breaking down Jets Dolphins for very long. I'm sorry. Our first highlight game of the day takes us up to New York, where Rex Ryan and his Buffalo Bills are 2-1 on the season. Still have a lot of public bravado, still talking a lot of tall stuff, and they will face the in-state, at least on paper, because the Giants play in New Jersey technically, but the 1-2 New York Giants, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, and company find their way into Buffalo. And the point spread on that one is the Bills, big 5.5-point favorite at home against the Giants. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, let me just go on the record here and say, I have no confidence in any of these picks this week. This is that bad of a week. I mean, this is just such, I mean, the first 3 weeks, you know, I felt good. My record was good. Thought like, man, I know where I'm going. Oh man, making the picks this week. I'm just looking at these lines. I'm looking at these matchups and I'm just like, ugh. You know, that's what you get with bad games.
You're going to go 11-4.
Oh, I just, yeah. I just have no,
and I'm gonna go
no confidence in these. It could happen. This could be my 3-win week. I'm calling it right here. I've got a lot of dogs this week, a lot. And that's not normal for me to go real heavy on the dogs. But this isn't one of them. I'm going to actually go here with the Buffalo Bills, and I'm going to give the 5.5 to the Giants. The Giants have no defense. Bills have looked good at home. I mean, even in that game against the Patriots, they did roll up stats. They did put up numbers. Tyrod Taylor's, we talked about him in the recap shows a couple times already. What a revelation that he's been. I really don't think they're going to lose all that much going from LeSean McCoy to Carlos Williams, because he's looked really good in his play so far. And that offense just seems to have it going, and that defense is really nasty. Eli Manning here. This feels like one of those 3-4 pick Eli Manning games, because it's pretty much he's just going to be trying to force that ball to Odell Beckham as much as he possibly can. And I don't think that's going to be enough to hold on the Giants in this game, let them hang in there. I like the Bills in this one fairly easy.
I don't have a lot of confidence in this particular game. There was only a few games this week where I really thought that I got a lot of confidence and really nailed it down, but this is not one of them. I don't feel good about this pick at all, but I'm going to make it anyway. I'm going to take the Giants to win. I don't know if this is a personal deal with all the Rex Ryan bullshit, and I'm just fed up with it already, and I'm rebelling against it. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'm looking at the numbers. I got my weekly stat comparisons out. I think 3 weeks into a season is enough time to start comparing who's doing what as far as yards per rush, yards per pass, who's preventing stuff, who's actually doing stuff better. Is that your daughter making another appearance? Indeed it is.
We don't need any balloons tonight, Trinity. Go to bed. Trinity, yeah, we don't need to blow up any balloons tonight. No, I'm not going to help tonight. Come on, go to bed. Oh, now she's drinking my water.
This is a perfect time to blow up balloons at 9:20 at night. I mean,
thank you, sweetheart. Good night. Sorry about that. This is such a bad week on the schedule. This is not planned. But
no, we understand. I'm scared to death, of course, of Buffalo building a lead, because that means Eli would be in trouble, as you've already said, that Buffalo would come after Eli and really blitz him hard and force him into potentially a lot of mistakes. But I suppose I'm going to trust New York to not let that happen. I'm still a little not believing this whole Tyrod Taylor thing. He's been awesome through the first three games. I understand that. If he keeps up this pace, though, he'd be an All-Pro. You know, he'd be in the Pro Bowl. I can't see Tyrod Taylor in the Pro Bowl, so I'm going to pick that streak to slow down a little bit. I'm going to pick this game for that to happen. On the injury front, still no Victor Cruz, of course, for the Giants, but I think a big key is cornerback Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie returning for them, because Buffalo's weaponry is severely hampered because of their injuries. They will not have Shady McCoy, as you already said. They will not have Sammy Watkins. They will not have Marquise Goodwin. Is this going to be all Robert Woods and maybe some Percy Harvin? I think Rodgers-Cromartie can shut down at least one of those weapons and make Tyrod Taylor one-dimensional. And the Giants, of course, are going to have what they always have, which is Eli to Odell Beckham. That's not going to change. I don't think Buffalo's going to be able to stop that, because no one's really been able to stop that yet. Should be some more Andre Williams running for the Giants. The news items say that Rashard Jennings is in a little trouble, hasn't been getting it done in the backfield for New York. I think Andre Williams could have a nice day for the Giants. And I'm looking at the Percy Harvin, Richie Incognito dynamic on that team. Everyone sort of laughed at Rex Ryan putting those guys together. It's like, is he just trying to build the team with the worst character? And it's working through 3 weeks, but that blow-up has got to be coming. I don't know why I would say this game would be it, but I'm just saying, look out for it. Eventually, one or both of those guys are going to do something to just destroy the team chemistry, because that's what they've done at every stop along the way in their professional career. So I'm hoping it happens for this game, but even if the Giants can't win, I will take the 5.5 points and hopefully backdoor it from there.
Yeah, like I said, I don't make any of these picks with any reasonable confidence this week, any of them. Especially with all the dogs that I have later on. Oh, man, I'm taking some crazy-ass dogs this week. But that's okay.
Uh-oh. Daughter's back. Cute factor.
Yes.
I love it.
What is that? Your wand? Do you want it in the bedroom? Okay, go take it. Do you want to say hello? No? Okay.
No, she's doing fine. She doesn't need to get on the air or anything. She's running the show. She's the boss as always, and everything's perfect in her world.
Close the door. Close the door. Come on. All right. Let's do this.
Kansas City and Cincinnati, the 1-2 Chiefs, of course, have been struggling big time, of course, against the Packers in their last game. The 3-0 Cincinnati Bengals, the opposite of struggling. They are dominant. They have looked as good as you can look on offense. Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, just running over the entire NFL. And subsequently, you would think the Bengals would be a big favorite at home against the 1-2 struggling Chiefs. Public still doesn't quite believe in the Bengals. They are only giving 3.5 at home against Kansas City. And unlike the San Diego game where I bit on that hook and got hooked, thinking that San Diego would get a backdoor cover, this time I'm going the other way. Cincy is playing so damn good, and Kansas City has looked so inept on offense at times, that I'm going to take Cincinnati to cover the 3.5. They're playing so good football right now. I make fun, of course, of it's not November, December, when Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis seem to forget how to play and coach football. So far, it's working great. The month of October hopefully will not trip them up, at least not quite yet. And I'm going to take the Bengals to cover 3.5. Obviously, the advantage, big advantage in the air for the Bengals, right now averaging 9.4 yards per throw, which is insane, and will not, of course, keep up. Even if it wasn't Andy Dalton, that wouldn't keep up through the whole year. But right now, they seem to be unstoppable in the air, and that's going to push the advantage, as far as I'm concerned, over to the Bengals' side, because it might wash out on the ground, Jamaal Charles versus Jeremy Hill. I think that might be a push. And so you look at the air attacks and you go, well, Kansas City's not going to be able to keep up in the air with Cincinnati. That's just not going to happen. Cincinnati playing much better defense than I would have thought. They're having a great year defending the pass so far, only 6.8 yards per attempt that they're giving up, and a very good year defending the run, only 3.9 yards per rush being given up. So the Bengals have got it clicking, offense, defense, you name it. This is a real test for these balls of offense, of course, with Kansas City's defense, and they can explode anytime. Tom Lee, Justin Houston, capable of having big, big games, as we know. But I'm going to take the Bengals this time. It's a little scary. When does this Andy Dalton blow-up game occur? It hasn't occurred yet. A big key to it not having occurred yet is, I was shocked to see this, that the Bengals have allowed 2 sacks the entire season. Andy Dalton's been sacked twice in 3 games. That is, of course, a real big key to making sure that Dalton doesn't mess up, because when he's clean, when he's standing up and not being pressured, he can obviously get the job done. And this is going to be a big test, like I said, to keep him upright against the Kansas City rush. But the Bengals are clicking, and I'm going to go with Cincinnati.
Yeah, the rush can't get to Andy Dalton. We kind of saw it. And it's not that I'm comparing Andy Dalton to Aaron Rodgers, but if the rush isn't getting home, that secondary is exposed right now. They just don't have the guys out there, and now they've got to go and they've got to cover pretty much with A.J. Green, who's almost uncoverable. He's just one of those top-tier elite wide receivers. Can't let him run free. Problem is, he always finds a way to be running free. That's what the good ones always do. That's what you see, like Julio Jones doing right now. Like, you know where the ball's going, and you still can't stop it. That's the mark of a top guy. And you just look at A.J. Green, and he's very similar. That when they need that big play, he's there. They missed him in the playoffs last year. So we talked about this as well on the recap show on Tuesday night, what a difference that made without them having him in the playoffs. So I'm completely with you here. I've got the Bengals here. The hook doesn't really scare me, because as I saw with Kansas City last week, if they're playing a team that's got some offensive rhythm, they're not going to hang with them. And right now,
Alex Smith as a catch-up quarterback?
Yeah, no. So if Cincinnati can get up on these guys, it's over. At 3.5, it won't matter. I don't really foresee garbage time type stuff like we saw last week. That's purely a Packer thing. That's just what they do, is they get up big and let teams come back. That's their move. We see this all the time up here. I'm very close to it. That's just what happens. They take the foot off the accelerator and just kind of coast to the victory. Or sometimes close to the not victory, like we saw in the NFC Championship game. So the backfield situation, though, seems to be not so much Jeremy Hill's. They've been going back to Gio Bernard. And that's actually become a split going towards Giovanni Bernard, who last year was supposed to be the guy, and then Hill took that job. And now Hill's been a little bit more ineffective, has some fumbling problems. And if you're going to have a backup to go to, oh, you might as well have it be Giovanni Bernard, who had that amazing 2013. So interesting
Absolutely.
Dynamic that they have with that backfield. So they have those are good problems to have. And, yeah, Andy Dalton, the meltdown hasn't started yet. I completely agree with you on this one. I don't think 3.5 is enough. I think that for what we've seen from football so far, this should be a 5 or a 6 point line. So it feels a little bit like a value pick to me here.
Now, do you see the Bernard thing continuing? Because in my opinion, I think sort of was a couple of weeks of a message to Jeremy Hill to get your shit together. I think Marvin Lewis might go back to leaning on Jeremy Hill because I think that's the original plan.
It could be, but they're different guys. So I have a feeling they could decide to utilize these guys. Maybe not to this way that the splits have been going so far, which has been about 60-40 towards Bernard. But last year, they went away from Giovanni Bernard so much, you forgot he was even on the team.
Yeah.
It was just all Jeremy Hill all the time. I think that Hill has basically played himself into a little bit more of a timeshare. I don't think he'll, at this point in week 4, go back to immediately being the every down back. So I think that the playing time will eventually skew back towards Hill, but I don't think it's going to just happen overnight or happen in one game. And then, but again, these are good problems to have. Those are both good running backs. There's a lot of teams that would love to have either one of those guys.
Yeah, they'll definitely keep mixing Bernard in because he is one of the best backups in the league. There's no doubt about that. Our third highlight game of the week, the only game featuring two teams who both happen to have winning records. The Minnesota Vikings, 2-1, that terrible start on Monday night in the opener, and they ran off two impressive home victories right after that. And Peyton Manning in the 3-0 Denver Broncos just keep finding ways to win. I guess as long as you stick with the plan and Peyton run his offense the way he wants, we all know my opinions on that. I've been harping on it and talking about it for the last 3 weeks, basically. Just let Peyton do what Peyton do. And the public agrees with that. Denver, 3-0 at home, or 3-0 on the season, are at home, and they give 7 points to the 2-1 Minnesota Vikings. Jason, what's your pick?
I'm going to go ahead and yes?
When I was in there, I turned the video off. I turned something on, and it comes on.
You turned something on in the bedroom?
Yeah, and it was me.
It was you?
Yeah, and I fixed it, and it turned on.
Yeah, well, you know what you need to do is go to sleep.
And I was trying to fix it. And I pushed the video button where you play games, and I turned on.
Okay, could you go to
and
bed now?
I was trying to fix it for you.
Oh, you fixed it for me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Now, you need to go to bed, because if Mommy gets home and you're still awake, Daddy's going to be in big trouble. Good night, Trini. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and start. I am taking the Minnesota Vikings here. I actually look at this as these are two very potent defenses right now. And Peyton Manning this is probably the best defense that he's had to play so far yet. Minnesota's offense scares me a little bit, especially Teddy Bridgewater going into that situation, but he's bringing the running game with him. Adrian Peterson looks to be back. So I expect to see a lot of him running the ball, catching the ball. They're going to try to utilize him as much as possible to compress this game, slow this thing down. The Broncos are winning, but they're not exactly, you know, beating these guys that they're not like killing teams that they're playing. They're finding ways to win, which is what great quarterbacks do overall. So I don't necessarily think that the Vikings win here, but I think they stay competitive in a fairly low scoring game.
Well, let's look at the Vikings opponents, if we're talking about schedule, because Adrian Peterson has made a renaissance comeback in these last 2 weeks, and he's done it against the dog-ass Detroit Lions and the softest toilet tissue San Diego Chargers. This is a different breed. This Denver Broncos defense is a different breed. It's his toughest test by far, even tougher than the 49ers on that opening Monday night. And I think it's not going to go so well for Mr. Peterson. And I also look at the other side of the ball, going to the defense. And it's a perfect symmetry for going against Denver, as far as going against Minnesota, as far as the pass goes. I'm all flustered by your daughter here. It's Minnesota, who's right now 32nd, dead last in the league in passing, against Denver, who's number one in the league in pass defense. Teddy Bridgewater is going to have to throw to get back in this game to win, because the Broncos defense will stiffen up and stand up to the test of Adrian Peterson. They are fired up. They're going to come in. They want to send a message that AP cannot run over them the way he did over the Chargers and the Lions. And it's going to make Bridgewater have to throw them back into the game. And that's when Denver's really going to eat. That's when the defensive backs are really going to have a ball. This is my lock of the week. I've got Denver. I'll give 7, and I'm locking it down. I don't think this is going to be close. Peyton Manning is doing what Peyton Manning does. He's not throwing for 300 yards and all that like he used to, but I think he's going to have enough support to do just fine in this game. It's time for the running game to help him out. That's been terrible so far, 31st in the league running, but they get the Vikings, who aren't exactly stopping the run very well this year. And I think C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman can actually get together and have a pretty good game for the Broncos. I've been very impressed by Denver and Gary Kubiak being flexible and letting Peyton do what he does. And I'm going to go for the Broncos, which I should have done last week against the Lions. And I guess this is my penance. This is what I get for going against Peyton Manning, is watching him shred the Lions on Sunday night. And I'm going to make up for it by taking him to beat up on the Vikings and cover the 7, and I'm locking that one down.
Okay. I hope you lose.
Very well said.
Because not only would you lose, you would lose a lock. So that makes it even more important.
Now, the rest of this craptastic week 4 in even more less detail, and we start, of course, tomorrow overseas in the UK. The Jets and the Dolphins, as we talked about on the last show, both coming off of getting their asses waxed at home, and then they have to get on a plane and go to England and play a game against each other. The 2-1 Jets give 1.5 points against the 1-2 Dolphins.
Yeah, at the Dolphins, right? This is Miami. This is the Miami Dolphins are now the London Dolphins for a week. So Miami's the home team here. I look at these London games almost like I do the doubleheader Monday night game, because everybody's sort of discombobulated. It's weird. You've got the flight, you've got the travel, you've got all the hubbub all going around about this thing. So basically what you expect to happen won't. So I'm going to take the Dolphins. I don't think the Dolphins are the better team, but we didn't think that the Niners were the better team than the Vikings. Weird shit happens in these games. Give me the Dolphins.
That's very true, but there's just something about this Dolphins team. You can read updates from certain people. It's all over my Twitter timeline about that if the Dolphins have a bad showing in this game, that they're just going to push the head coach, Joe Philbin, right off the plane overseas and let him fall into the Atlantic. They're not even going to let him come back to the States. So this is one of those games where if the team really believes in their head coach, they steel up and get together and put forth the strong effort that they need to keep this coach around. I don't think the Dolphins believe in their head coach. I think they're going to lay an egg, and I think the Jets are going to whoop their ass. Well, she just will not go to bed.
This is not working.
Why are you coloring? What are you doing?
That's what Mommy made.
Is it? Oh, I see. This is your reward chart for sleeping overnight in your room, which you're not doing.
No, it's not working.
It's a puppy. Somebody drew a puppy on your sheet.
I did that.
No, you did not draw that, Trini.
excited.
Okay.
Well,
how about I put this over here and you go to bed? Say goodnight.
No.
I'm just going to let Trini make the rest of my picks for me tonight. Good night. Okay.
Okay. And one defensive sack by Miami this year is pathetic. So, yeah, I'll take the Jets. Jacksonville at 1-2. Get 9.5 points on the road at the 1-2 Indianapolis Colts. But the thing about that is, it really seems like Andrew Luck is legitimately a game-time decision to even start this game tomorrow. So it might be him, it might be Matt Hasselbeck, and I don't know, one of us might be having to make a contingency pick on this one.
Oh, would that be you?
I don't know. Would it be you?
No, because I don't care who's starting. I'm taking Jacksonville tomorrow, and I'm taking the 9 points. I haven't seen anything from the Colts to be a 9-point favorite.
Even if Andrew Luck is starting.
Yeah, they're 0-3 against the spread this year. How about 0-4?
I concur with you. I'm taking Jacksonville. I don't give a damn who's starting.
No. I actually, in my not in the league, the fantasy league that you and I are in, because I'm playing you, but the fantasy league I'm in at work, I actually benched Andrew Luck and picked up Tyrod Taylor for this game.
Oh, my God. The Tyrod Taylor love just continues on. I can't argue it right now because one of those two quarterbacks has played his ass off this year, and it's not Andrew Luck.
The other one has not.
Mm-hmm.
The other one has just played like ass.
Indeed. I'm worried about the Colts still not having their second-best cornerback in Greg Toler. He won't play again. Jack might actually keep up with him in the air. It might be the brothers, Ron and Hearns. They might actually have a nice day against the Colts. It's not been a pass at all this year. And Lux is vulnerable even if he does play. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home at 1-2. This starts a streak of a bunch of home teams as 3-point underdogs. The Carolina Panthers at 3-0, and however you believe in that record. They are indeed 3-0, and they are 3-point road favorites at the Buccaneers.
Well, I'll tell you about how I believe in that 3-0 record. Uh-oh. I don't. Give me Tampa to win.
Oh, wow. I don't believe in it either, necessarily. It's still, Tampa Bay is just not
bad.
Very good. They're bad. Yeah, I'll take Carolina and give the 3. Here's the thing. Ted Ginn and Devin Funches. I'm thinking about that Tennessee game where Kendall Wright just split the Lovey 2 like it was nobody there. Those two guys can do that too. They're kind of fast. They're not great wide receivers by any stretch, but they're kind of fast. And I can see either one of them splitting down the seam right down that Lovey 2 and getting a big touchdown and covering the number just from that alone. It might be 7-3, but that covers for me. I'll take it. Now what is she doing?
I don't know. My daughter's singing Let It Go.
Oh, okay. The mic's picking that up, by the way, so she's really giving a concert.
I have no idea how, because that's in another room through a closed door.
Well, I can hear it. I know that much. Jameis Winston had a rapport with Austin Perry and Jenkins, the tight end, and he will not play on tomorrow. So that's another big factor against Tampa, as far as I'm concerned. Philadelphia.
You can only get this on our show, by the way. You cannot get this level
nowhere
of
else.
This enjoyment.
High entertainment, absolutely. The Eagles at 1-2 finally seem to figure things out last week. They are a 3-point road favorite at the 1-2 division rival Washington Redskins.
Yeah, I'm not that crazy about all these, 3-point road favorites, but I got to go with this one. The Eagles showed some spark last week. If anything, Darren Sproles is going to try to single-handedly carry this team back into some contention. This is more of an anti-Redskins pick. You know, yeah, I picked them to kind of snipe the Rams, but that was not a pro-Redskins pick as much as that was a letdown pick for the Rams traveling to the East Coast after a big win. I really don't like the Redskins here at all. This is not a good spot for them. So give me the Eagles to kind of get it rolling.
Yeah, I'll concur with that. Philadelphia's is it back on track? Was the Jets game an aberration? We might find out tomorrow, but I'll go with the Eagles as well. Big return, Michael Kendricks at linebacker should play for the Eagles. They're going to need with the Redskins running attack getting geared up. DeMarco Murray might be back, but should he be? Should it be Ryan Matthews and Darren Darren Sproles?
Doesn't mean anything. We talked about that. Just because he's back doesn't mean anything. He's just back. He's just on the maybe on the sideline. That's back.
I can't see Chip Kelly not playing in the big money man if he gets back. But that I don't know. Well, they have to mix him in as far as I'm concerned. They have to. They paid him too much damn money. No D'Angelo Hall for the Redskins or DeSean Jackson, two big losses that I think will contribute to Philly winning. Oh, and this might go against my theory about the NFC East defensive backfields, because I wasn't counting on this matchup necessarily before the season began of Sam Bradford versus Kirk Cousins. That'll get those numbers down. I don't think there's going to be...
Well, at least this isn't a primetime game. Could you imagine if this was Monday Night Football?
But I don't think there's going to be big numbers put up through the air by either one of these guys. I just think the Eagles are a better team overall. The Oakland Raiders are 2-1 and everybody's darlings, and they are 3.5-point road favorites at...
Your Chicago Bears.
I feel like I'm going to cry. Jimmy Clausen and the 0-3 Chicago Bears.
As hard as I tried to bear whisper this game, I just can't do it. I just can't. That Oakland offense is really starting to click. They look pretty stacked. The Bears are having a fire sale on defense. Jimmy Clausen, no Alshon Jeffrey. Brandon Marshall got shipped off. There's nothing there. But, it's bad. I'm sorry. This feels like an Oakland squish.
It does. 63 yards passing last week against the Seahawks. 63 yards.
And if Seattle's offense wasn't just settling for field goals, that could have been 50-0.
Mm-hmm. It really could have. I don't know what they're going to possibly have Clausen come out and do tomorrow. You would think it would be a hell of a lot more than 63 yards. But even so, if he doubles that, he throws for a $120. Come on. So yeah,
that won't get it done. Amari Cooper might have 120 yards receiving by himself
in the first half.
Yeah, against that set. Oh boy.
I'll take Oakland and give the 3.5. I really wish the Bears had all their guys, because this is a game they should win, but they don't.
Yeah.
I can't pick Jimmy Clausen. I just can't do it.
Yeah, all the Cutler haters. Sorry, if Cutler was there, they win this game.
Put Clausen in. Cutler sucks. There you go. There's your guy. Yeah. Have fun with that.
Will there be a David Fales sighting in this game, I believe is his name?
Why the hell not? If you're going to
what do you got to lose? Clausen, you're going to lose the game.
If you're
going to
send Clausen out there and have a game plan so pussified that he throws for 63 yards, then why not send David Fales out there and see what he can do? If you have that little confidence in Clausen, why not?
Just call Brady Quinn. He probably needs a job.
Bring Tebow in if you're going to do that. Just go with the whole circuit. Why not? Send in the clowns.
Is that what plays when the Bears were not on the field?
That or yakety sacks. The Houston Texans at 1-2 are 5.5-point underdogs at the other surprising 3-0 team, the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, this is, you called the J.J. Watt game would be last week. I'm going to call for it to be this week. I think that they're going to get in there. That defensive line is going to wreck some things that Atlanta's trying to do. I'm going to take the Falcons to win, but Houston to cover, I think. And Atlanta's been having to come from behind every game. I don't know if this is even going to necessarily be any different. So I like Atlanta by a close margin and Houston to cover the number.
Arian Foster could go tomorrow for the first time this season. We know Tevin Coleman will not go for Atlanta on the other side as far as running back, so more Devontae Freeman, who looked very good last week. I'm going to concur with you. I'm going to go a step further and even take Houston to win the game, because why the hell not?
I think Atlanta's due to kind of come back to earth a little bit here, too.
Well, it's Matt Ryan's first game versus a non-NFC East secondary, so I kind of have to go against him, because I've been picking him just because of that factor all along. So his first game against someone that's not in that shitty-ass NFC East, yeah, I'll take Atlanta to fall on their face the first time they don't play that terrible division. Why not? And, yeah, J.J. Watt might break through Atlanta's pass protection, which has never been all that good. Cleveland, and it's not Johnny Football, it's still Jake McClown, for some unknown reason. The 1-2 Browns, 7-point underdogs out at the equally 1-2 San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of defense played in this game.
No, I don't think so.
So, just with that being said, I'm going to actually take Cleveland here. A little Brown fever. First time this year I think I've had the Brown fever. Taking Cleveland strictly for the points, and for no other reason than I just don't know if San Diego can be stout enough to beat anybody by 7 right now.
No, I guess I see that point, but Cleveland's just such a mess right now. I'm going to take San Diego squish. This would have been my lock if not for Denver. San Diego cannot let Jake McClown keep Cleveland in the game. They just can't do it. I understand the Chargers defense hasn't been all that, but come on. I don't want to be the advocate for Johnny Football, but for God's sake, why the hell not? The Bears might as well with David Fales, and the Browns might as well with Johnny Football, because what do you got to lose?
They did win their only game with Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. So what the hell? What Jake McClown is such a great veteran, you have to give him his starting job back? Come on, give me a break.
No, they hate Johnny Manziel. They want to wash themselves of that as fast as they can, and no better way to do that than let Jake McCrown be your quarterback.
Chargers have a bunch of O-line injuries, but luckily for them, they're playing Cleveland, so it won't matter. And then on the other side of the ball, we talked about before the season that Cleveland, the one saving grace they had was that they had a talented defensive backfield. Well, Joe Hayton's been nicked up all year. He's not 100%, and Keenan Allen is just waiting. He is salivating, thinking about getting him a piece of the Cleveland Browns defensive backfield, and so that's why I have the Chargers to have a big blowout win. The Green Bay Packers, ever impressive at 3-0, big 7.5-point road favorites out at the awful 1-2 San Francisco 49ers.
I'm taking the big dog. But this doesn't feel like they might be kind of let down.
I'll take the 7.5 points with you for that last part, for that reason that Colin Kaepernick, if he's going to have another big game this entire season, this probably is it. He should get flashbacks of that playoff game where he ran up and down and over and around the Packers defense. And I think this will be their big effort, one of the last big efforts before they completely go in a tank and wind up with a 3-13 type season. I also do not have them necessarily to win, but that's a lot of points at home for a team that is talented on the ground against a Green Bay Packers team that is not talented stopping teams on the ground. So I will agree with you and take the 49ers and the points. The St. Louis Rams at 1-2 are 7-point underdogs at the 3-0, everyone's darling, Arizona Cardinals.
I do not see anything from this Arizona team to make me want to pick against them right now. They are lighting chumps up and they are not taking the foot off the gas. They're patriotizing people right now. I look for it to keep going here against the great Nick Foles. No, thank you. Arizona squish.
And I should go with you. I'm sick of the Cardinals beating on me and making me look like a complete moron.
Yeah, they're doing the Chiefs to you.
They are, and yet I'm going to take the points and take the Rams, who I admit have no chance at all in this game unless they just storm the castle on pass rush. But I think they will. I think they can do that and disrupt what's been the most effective pass offense in the game so far this season. And Carson Palmer and the Arizona Cardinals. I think the Rams can actually get to them.
And the Rams did pull a Kimo von Olhoffen on Roethlisberger last week.
There you go.
And who is the one who originally got Kimo von Olhoffen is Carson Palmer.
He knows all about
dudes diving at his knees.
So perhaps a return to interception Santa with all that pressure and a backdoor cover for the Rams. At least I'm sincerely hoping so.
He could throw three picks tomorrow and they'll still win by 15 or 16 points.
Yeah, you're probably right. Have we not gotten to your lock yet? Because we only got two games left.
We have not.
Wow. Okay. Sunday night sees Brandon Wheaton, the Weed Man, and the 2-1 Cowboys as 3.5-point underdogs at the 0-3 New Orleans Saints. That's what the public thinks of the Weed Man.
Yeah. As much as I hate to do this, I'm going to go with the Saints here. Dallas got their great half of football with Brandon Wheaton at quarterback last week against Atlanta and then completely shit the bed in the second half. And I think, which team are we going to see? The first half Cowboys or the second half Cowboys? I think we're going to see the second half Cowboys. If you put them in a position where they have to throw, you'll beat them, and the Saints are going to do it.
I concur. I know New Orleans 0-3, but when you put Weed Man on the road in such a hostile environment in that situation, I think he's going to choke again. I agree with you completely. I think you're going to see that second half Cowboys team. You might see that second half Cowboys team for the entire game this time. Drew Brees, of course, is listed as probable, so he's expected to come back and play in tomorrow's game.
Yeah, he's expected to start. Although Luke McClown looked okay.
Right. But possibly equally as important as Brees is defensive backs Keenan Lewis and Jairus Byrd expected to come back for New Orleans. They desperately need somebody to stop the pass on that Saints defense, and they need some help now. And just in time for this game, they're going to get it, and I think it's going to make all the difference. And I will take the Saints with a big victory at home, getting their first win of the season. And that brings us to Monday night, where I'm already going to underline the Seahawks for you because that's obviously going to be your lock of the week. Biggest spread of the week, the Detroit Lions at 0-3 playing like complete caca. 10-point underdogs up at the hardest place in the NFL to play, the 1-2 Seattle Seahawks.
Yes, you correctly locked that down for me. I love Seattle here. It's like this is the same script as it was last year. It's like they come out, they look like crap the first couple weeks, and it's like a sleeping giant has been awakened. They completely roll up the Bears last week. I'm looking for them to just do the exact same thing here to Detroit in prime time. Cam Chancellor, another week of practice. He'll be back in more game shape. Detroit, they can't run the ball. Kelvin Johnson, I don't know what's going on. Matthew Stafford looks scared. Seattle's defense is just going to put a whooping on these guys. Seattle's going to kill them.
Beast mode, game time decision Seattle, Marshawn Lynch. But even if he doesn't play, Thomas Rawls looked just fine against the Bears last week.
Is that Lou Rawls?
Thomas Rawls.
Oh, you'll never find. Oh, sorry.
Maybe a long lost relative. Who knows? I'll concur. Seattle squish. Drake Bell will not play for the Lions. DeAndre Levy out again. Detroit certainly playing like crap. I would never have thought they could start 0-4, but it sure looks like they're going to. Even getting more time for Amir Abdullah in the backfield for the Lions isn't going to work because this is the complete wrong environment for that to happen. He's going to have success later in the year, but not this game. On Monday night in Seattle, no. Not the right time for that. I'm going to cut this show off here at the live portion because you and your daughter certainly are having a fun time.
I'm hoping she's asleep now because it's been about 15 minutes of quiet. So hope she's sleeping now. It's almost 10 o'clock. She needs to be asleep.
Either way, we are done with our live show and have fun tomorrow. Now into a very abbreviated after-show portion of our program. Did you have any topics you wanted to get to specifically?
You know, there was really nothing that I had thought of. Excited for the baseball playoffs to finally start next week. I mean, now that we're starting to see all of the shakeups and the shakedowns. I don't know if you saw we keep glowing and beaming about Jake Arrieta, but it set a major league record last night. Did you see that?
I did.
Best ERA.
Lowest ERA.
After the All-Star break in history. Just
pretty awesome.
Obscene. 0.87, I believe, was the number, or 0.86. I mean, when you just think about the fact that I think they said he gave up 9 runs in 107 innings after the All-Star break. Which means he's going to go out next Wednesday against Pittsburgh and give up 9 in the first inning. Because that's just the way history works, right?
Well, it's one game. It's 162 baseball games come down to that one where anything can happen.
Yeah.
Get a blister.
If somebody would have told me before the season started, we'd be looking at a Garrett Cole, Jake Arrieta matchup in the wild card game, I'd be excited. So I should be excited. I'm very fatalistic right now, though. I actually do not expect them to win that game. Just because this wasn't the plan. You know, it's almost like don't win that game. It's too soon. You guys need to blossom and grow. And then I look at the fact that, well, let's see, that if they were in the American League, they'd have the best record in the American League with their 90, 95 wins. They win today, tomorrow, they'd have 97 wins. That's just insane for the wild card team to have 95 wins right now.
It is crazy.
It is. It is. So hopefully, and not just because of the Cubs, because we've been talking about this with this playoff format, they need to look at this. Just in general, they need to look at this thing with the wild card game. It's a total farce. It'll be exciting, though. I mean, that doesn't mean I'm not going to be watching on Wednesday night. I'll be watching. That's huge. But there's just something doesn't feel right that you have two teams that are going to win, you know, between 95 and 100 games, with, you know, each, Cubs and the Pirates. And they have one game and you're out.
Yeah, that seems to be just wrong. I guess
not that people think I'm just being a homer here with this. It's documented that we both have hated this one game play-in for a long time.
Absolutely.
We hated it last year, and the Cubs, the White Sox, teams that we root for were nowhere even close to being involved in this game, and we've hated it since the get-go.
Wasn't it the first year of this one game wild card thing where they had a game that some infielder dropped a ball and it should have been bases loaded, and it should have been a big error, but the umpires called the infield fly, and everyone was howling like, what are you doing? What the?
Well, and then last year you have the A's blow a 7-1 lead or something like that against the Royals. Right. I mean, and just, like, you're the Oakland A's, and you played your whole season, and that's how you go out. You just go out like punks.
But the silliest things, the umpires' whim or – yeah. Maybe a tight strike zone or something can decide that this little one-game playoff thing, and it has almost – that could possibly have nothing to do at all with how good your team is. Just is completely bullshit.
Yeah, it's horseshit.
But I guess I would ask, is this still more fair than the old system when we were kids?
Oh.
Because
you think – the East and West and that's it, one team from each?
Right, when you think about obviously that 102-win San Francisco Giants team that didn't make the playoffs because the Atlanta Braves had 103 wins and won that division. We were sitting there talking about the 97-win Cubs getting squeezed
potentially,
because they
they're 95 right
game.
Now. I don't know what they did tonight. I haven't looked. They were winning 1-0 the last I saw. But they're not even really playing for. I think Pittsburgh has that locked up, that the game will be in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think it was two. They were up two games starting today. So if the Pirates won today, then it's done.
Yeah.
The Cubs won one to nothing. Yep.
Cubs won 1-0, and the Pirates lost 3-1. But I don't know. I think the Pirates actually have the tiebreaker because I don't think they'll play a 163 just to determine who plays at home for 164. That makes no sense.
I'm looking at a tweet right now that says Chicago owns the tiebreakers. If the Cubs win and Pirates lose Sunday, Wednesday's game will be played at Wrigley Field.
Interesting. So so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting when you consider that in order for that to happen, the Cubs will have, I think they're on a 6-game winning streak right now. Actually, they're on a 7-game winning streak. So they'll actually end up having to have an 8-game winning streak to finish out the year, and Pittsburgh will have to lose tomorrow. Interesting, though. Amazing that they're still playing for something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're right down to the last day.
But the splits for the Cubs are, they're good on the whole. But again, when you're a 95-game winner, chances are good that you're good on the road and at home, and the Cubs are pretty close to the same record both at home and away. Honestly, it doesn't matter to me where they play.
Yeah, it's not going to really make much of a difference where that game's played. It's going to be Gerrit Cole versus Jake Arrieta, and may the best man win. I can see that game being scoreless in the eighth, no matter what. And that's really what it comes down to.
That really could be luck. That's going to be a bullpen game, potentially. I mean, I have a feeling you might see whoever ends up winning that game go the distance.
Right, or we could go into the 11th and 12th inning scoreless and up all night for that one.
So, great setup, though. And, like, it doesn't matter to me. Yeah, does it matter, though, if they're at home or away? No, because this is one game. This isn't like home field for the NFC Championship. You know, where it's always one game. Or home field for football. This is a baseball game. It's so random. You know, the Cubs could win 8 in a row to get that home game and then lose it. And that'd be it. So, I'm not overly worried about that. Although, you know, yeah, it's cool. And they can say, hey, we finished in second place. Okay, great. Yeah, good job, guys. And then you lost the play-in game. So, I'd rather see them lose tomorrow and win on Wednesday, obviously.
Did you see what Max Scherzer did for the Nationals tonight, who cannot make the playoffs? At all.
I know that he was throwing a no-no through 7, and then I did not see the update after that.
Completed the no, struck out 17.
Not a perfecto.
As dominant as you can get. Not a perfecto only because somebody made an error behind him. He didn't walk anybody.
Oh.
That's the only thing that stopped it from being a perfect game. So when you think about 28 outs.
Yeah.
No base runners except for an error, and he struck out 17. You can't get too much more dominant than that.
No, that's actually reminiscent of the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game, because the only base runner that he allowed in that game was straight up should have been an error on Kevin Ory. It was just a ground ball right to him, and he whiffed it, and they gave the guy a base hit. So it ended up being a one-hitter, but it was an obvious error. Everybody at the stadium was like, and this was early in the game, so it wasn't like we're all just like, this is a big deal. But it was a hit that was, it was scored an error, but they scored a hit, and it should have been scored an error. That should have been a no-hitter as well. So it's reminiscent of that when we talk about these types of performances.
Speaking of your Cubs, somebody got a GoFundMe campaign together to try to get Bartman to the wild card game, I guess, to sort of bygones be bygones and let all water under the bridge and all that stuff.
What they need to do is send him to Pittsburgh and have him interfere.
Put him right on
that. That's the only way he can make up, is if he goes to a road game and interferes with the other team to help the Cubs somehow. That's the only come up. You know, the only way that you can come back from something like that.
Same seat right down the line.
Mm-hmm. I think they took that seat out of Wrigley Field. Did you know that?
Oh, my God, no. it's infected?
No, I just think it's gone. I think that that seat is gone. Nobody wants to sit in the Bartman seat. I don't think you can sit in that seat anymore.
Oh, my God.
That's a story I heard. Maybe it's just an urban legend.
Only the Cubs. No, I believe.
Is that like only the Bulls?
Boom, 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 boom. Only the Cubs. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. I don't know if it's true or not, but that sounds like the Cubs. With the Billy Goats and everything else. That sounds like something they would do.
Yeah, that is straight right. This team doesn't really seem to be all caught up with that. I mean, maybe Joe Madden's got their heads right. They don't really seem to be all caught up in this sort of like juvenile, like curse type stuff. You don't really hear the questions. But I think a lot of that comes from the fact that they are ahead of schedule. You know, I think we would have heard this more 2 years from now once we expected this team to be a little bit more of like a powerhouse. But once again, 95 wins. How are they going to get better? That's scary.
Rookies are supposed to get better as they go on. This is not supposed to be the peak of Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber and Addison Russell and all those guys. They're supposed to be
they're
getting
doing
a
this
lot
with,
better.
They're doing this with Chris Coughlin and some of
the veteran.
The back end of that rotation with Kyle Hendricks, who, by the way, is part of that shutout of the Brewers today. And that bullpen is just like waiting to blow up. So there's obvious improvements that can happen with this team, which is just blows my mind, which means they're going to win 75 games next year.
They could go after a veteran closer to fill out the bullpen next year. They could go after Jonathan Papelbon.
And he's done.
And then he can choke your best player when he thinks he's not up.
Jonathan Papelbon is so washed up. And that's hard to say for me saying that, because Jonathan Papelbon won me money.
Oh, yeah.
Big time, you know. So, love me some Jonathan Papelbon, but yeah, he's done.
And going back to the days when he was supposed to be a starter for the Red Sox.
Yeah, when you're a one-pitch pitcher for the most part, when you're just basically throwing that blazing fastball and it ain't so blazing anymore, you're done.
Yep.
Yeah, you're Mitch Williams.
Except Mitch Williams isn't putting his hands around Joe Carter's throat or anyone else.
No. He would probably like to, though. He got posterized.
Forever and ever immortalized. He's probably making money off of that. He probably goes to autograph sessions and signs pictures of that home run all the time and makes money off of that. So he's probably, you know, he's probably not so upset with that anymore.
It's possible.
All right. Anything else on the docket?
No, I think I'm good. And we'll have a better handle. Well, yeah, we're probably going to be, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday. Probably Tuesday. Tuesday's been working good for recap shows. It's a good night for me. So we won't really have much of a handle baseball-wise on anything, except for that will be, I think, the AL wildcard game Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance we'll be doing the show live right during that game, which is still a mess. Who's playing in that game? Do we know? No.
No. I know the Twins are not.
We know that the Yankees are playing in that game, right? That's about it.
Against either the Rangers or the Astros.
Or the Angels. The Angels are out, right? Yeah, because the Angels got eliminated.
I know the Twins got eliminated, and I think the Angels might still be in it.
Yeah, I mean, are the Angels hanging? They might be, because I know they came back and completely just shocked the Rangers today with 5 in the ninth.
Yeah.
That was an 11-10 game. Just nuts. You're just thinking, oh, Rangers are – here they go. Come on. I just need to – I want to look good. I picked the Rangers to make the playoffs, so come on, guys.
They were going to clinch today with a win, and now they got to come back and clinch it tomorrow. Just go out and win one game. That's all you got to do, just one.
Just win one game. That's all you got to do. This is basically like the play-in game for them tomorrow. Show something.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
All right.
And not next Tuesday or next week, but the week after that is my anniversary week. I wouldn't be around for any kind of recap. And as far as picking that Thursday game, I guess we're going to have to go with you, text me your pick or something like that while I'm away on vacation.
No, you can text me the pick and I can throw it up on the blog.
Okay.
Just to get it on the record.
Yeah, one way or another, we'll get it up on the blog, but, yeah. But no recap show in a couple
of
weeks.
I'll have to go into the site and figure this out. Maybe I'll just have to try to figure out how to do a recap show all on my own.
Uh-oh.
Trainwreck Radio.
Or you and your daughter. Your daughter
actually,
already wants
yeah,
to be a
I could
co-host.
I do have a co-host ready and willing at any moment.
Yeah, and she'll even sing for you.
Yeah, I'm getting right. the full rendition tonight.
Yep. All right. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your incredibly full football Sunday tomorrow from morning to night, and we will talk to you probably coming up Tuesday night for a recap show.